I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 372. Y'all, I got news.
You're pregnant.
Shut the fuck up. Faith sent us an email, and she said, with a link, do you remember that case that I did, Chandra May? And we had done it for a live at the library, and then I did this whole story, and it turns out it was Donna's, and so I had to do the one that we had done for the library on an episode. That was episode 296. So at the time, there had been, like, nothing with the case, but an arrest has been made.
Was it one of the police officers? Because, you know, that's what they were saying at the library, was that it was, like, an old police officer. The rumors, I mean.
Okay, so according to WLBT3, on your side, like, this literally happened April 29th, 2005. This is, like, breaking news. It says
breaking.
Reuben Weeks, who's 63 now, was arrested in the abduction and murder of Chandra May. So they arrested him at the RV park where he had been living. And
RV or RB?
Why would it be RB?
Well, that's what it sounded. So I thought RB, like, I don't know. Enunciate, ma'am.
So this guy confessed to kidnapping a clerk at a motel where, like, he and his family were staying in 1991, and then raping the clerk and binding her with tape. Now, she lived and testified against him, which gave him a life sentence in prison. Now, this made them go, huh, and they started questioning, but they didn't have enough at the time to charge him with Chandra's case, because that happened in Missouri, not Mississippi. But also, why was he out if he got life in prison?
Right.
But the sheriff says it took years of cooperation and investigative know-how. But he's like, hey, it's not done. So, you know, if y'all know anything, let us know. But I don't understand why he was out.
Wait, what?
Like, why was he out from that life in prison?
No, what do you mean? The police said?
The police are like, our work's not done. Like, he's just been arrested. They still have to try him and all of that.
Okay, so,
like,
okay.
If you have any information, hit him up.
Okay, I was just like, wait, what?
But this is what Faith's email says. I came to your live show where you went over the Chandra May case, and I wanted to let you know that an arrest has been made in the case. I mentioned that I have a personal connection to the case, as my mother was around Chandra's age, worked in Forest, Mississippi at the time, and was stalked by one of the local suspects. He's not the one suspected by most locals, but he definitely fits the bill and was one of the original suspects. He spent years in prison in Missouri for rape and kidnapping. This is a big day for this part of Mississippi. In the arrest photo, you can see the sheriff smiling in the background.
Oh, wow. Also, Faith, thank you for the update and for coming to the library. If I'm remembering correctly, I think you live in Jackson now.
Guess what else I found? Like, basically, middle of Googling stuff for Chandra May. Not really, not that serious of timing. But guess what I found?
What?
According to KTTC, a judge unsealed Jody Huzentrout's search warrants.
What?
So, just that episode we did not too long ago, how we talked about, like, we don't really know, all this stuff has been sealed, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So, they released part of a search warrant from 2017.
Like, legit, though, I thought her parents, well, her family, was like, we don't want anyone to know but the criminal and the
Okay,
police.
So this KTTC article that was like, you know how Google put the tiles of, like, recommend for you? It was on that. So it says, Mason City police have publicly said no useful information came from the search. The judge ruled that part of the search warrant can be unsealed. However, the affidavit that contains sensitive information will stay sealed. So the search warrant details law enforcement was looking to remove electronic tracking devices from a Honda Civic and a GMC 1500. Remember the Van Sice, or I forget how to say his name. The friend that they were like, okay, I forget how to say his last name. Van Sice, I think. Anyway, he used those vehicles to travel back and forth from Arizona to Iowa. Remember when he moved? And so those were his vehicles that they were looking.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's my up-to-date news.
Wow. I'm sorry, not up-to-date news, but breaking news. Like, you had multiple things.
So how's the house?
Still standing, no termies, and
what you gonna do about the hole in your drywall?
It's a little one. So
sounds like a really good place for a piece of art.
Right. Like, well, that's where it's right underneath the art that I have. And I was like, I just need to find a little knickknack thing just because, I mean, it's like teeny tiny.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I thought it was like.
No, it's teeny tiny.
Oh, okay. I thought it was significantly bigger. That's why I was so
like, what the fuck when I killed one and then their whole family reunion happened on my wall. Because I'm like, how are they coming out? But yes, that's a lot better. My checking account hurts, but at least I can sleep in my bed. Though I will say, we went to the like local crawfish jam, and where we were sitting, it looked like a termite. I'm pretty sure it was a termite that fell on me, like flew on me.
Oh my God.
I'm like, I can't get fucking away from them.
Ooh, maybe it was just a flying ant.
It might have been, but it, I mean, it really looked like it. And I was like, swarmers.
But that shows you like how you can get them too. Like, it could have just hitched a ride on your shoulder and been pregnant, and here we are.
Okay, well, they were flying. It wasn't just around me, but still, it landed on me. Also, you know how we're like, woo, woo, you know, like when you're like getting into it, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, I did that, and like no one was wooing by me at the crawfish thing, and they were like, you're scaring families away. Like, because, like, people were walking by. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, but for real, like, why is everyone leaving? Well, what I didn't know is behind me was another entrance. And so they were literally coming in. But it did look like they were like, ooh, this girl's too lit.
Yeah.
Like, we got to go over to another side. But I was like, oh, my God. I think I'm actually too much for people. But no.
Oh, my God, y'all. Today, speaking of too much, someone brought donuts. Someone brought us a bag of candy, like a whole box of like treats. Somebody brought us like sandwiches and Dr. Pepper. And I had, this is all before like 10 a.m. So my coffee, a Dr. Pepper, an oatmeal cream pie.
Ooh.
And like two Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh, Krispy Kreme.
There was a moment where I literally out loud said, I'm at a 10 and I need to bring it down to a 3. Like I was hopped up. It was
hopped up
on sugar.
Also, didn't they bring beignets too?
Yeah. Then somebody, yeah. I was like, gah.
Monday, we're having a taco bar for Cinco de Mayo.
Okay. In other news, Colby and I are watching Righteous Gemstones.
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched it?
No, that's not my thing.
Okay, I was going to say, because I've been singing the song, and you didn't know what it was. So,
no.
Well, at first, the first couple episodes, because my sister Kelly told me we needed to watch it, my mom goes, do you think I'd like it?
No.
Goes, no, you would hate it, Mom. Don't watch it.
Yeah, no.
Lots of dicks happening. So Donna's like, must watch now.
No.
Yeah, it's not usually my humor. Now, the first couple episodes kind of gave me anxiety. It was kind of giving me, like, Hangover vibes. That was like a couple of episodes, you know, so, you know, it gave me some anxiety at first, just because I am strange with stuff like that. But once I got a couple more episodes in, I was like, okay, this is actually funny. But that damn Misbehavin' song, I literally opened my eyes today and went, Misbehavin'. I was like, why am I obsessed with this? Because I had been seeing it on TikTok before I knew where it came from. And now I'm like, I literally went, that's where this is from?
Yeah, I tried the first episode and I didn't make it.
Yeah, I had definitely was like 3 episodes in before I was like, okay, what happens next, you know?
Yeah.
But if you have no fucking idea what we're talking about, it's got, well, John Goodman's the only person I know in it. But he's like the dad preacher and they are like a televangelist, like big mega church family, and it's 3 kids, and anyway, it's just like making fun of the whole mega church, lots of money, like blow you COVID away type stuff, you know, like that guy.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into the story, we have to talk about Miracle Maid. Okay, the weather's heating up, and if your sheets are trapping that heat like a microwave burrito, we need to talk.
Unless you're trying to feel that heat with your partner, but even then, you don't want your sheets making you sweat like a sauna. That's not what's supposed to make you sweat.
Yeah, and if I'm that hot, don't touch me.
True.
But enter Miracle Made. We have been using these sheets for, well, I think years now.
Yeah.
And I freaking love them.
Oh, me too. You can tell a difference. They're soft, luxurious, inspired by NASA. So we're basically sleeping like space queens.
They're temperature regulating thanks to being silver-infused fabric, which means you don't wake up sweaty or freezing, just perfectly cozy.
Warm weather sleeping can be the worst because you're so freaking hot. Because who can afford the electric bill to be the air down low, all the things. But these sheets definitely keep me cool all night.
And we've had people ask in the Facebook group, like, do y'all really use these? What do y'all really think? And we're like, no, we literally use these. I really do recommend them. And they're like, well, are you sure? You know what? I'm not really sure. And I'm like, well, don't forget, they've got the 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you don't like them, send them back. Give them a try because it's literally what's on my bed right this moment.
Yeah. So I was washing mine and look, I'm not a laundry queen, okay? It stays in the dryer for like a couple of days. That's my, you know, makeshift drawer. So I had to put on some different ones while those are washing. And literally, it's just like, ugh, I need my Miracle Made sheets back.
They feel like you would find them at a 5-star hotel, but they don't have that 5-star price tag. So whether you're sleeping solo, sharing a bed, or just trying to stay cool in the heat, Miracle Made has you covered. Literally.
And let's not forget, they are self-cleaning. The silver-infused fabric prevents up to 99.7% of bacteria growth. So they stay fresh way longer.
And now's the time to try them. Go to trymiracle.com/creep and use the promo code creep to save over 40%.
And you'll get a free 3-piece towel set with your order and save an extra 20%.
If you use the promo code creep at checkout. So head on over to trymiracle.com/creep and don't forget to use the promo code creep at checkout to get that extra 20% of the already 40% off and your free 3-piece towel set.
Upgrade your sleep, stay cool, and you know what? Feel the heat only when you want to with a special someone.
Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Okay, so I was feeling a kidnapping. Like, I was like, I really want to do a kidnapping story. Like
I'm glad you said story after that, because that soundbite could be bad.
Yeah, I don't want to do one. I'm too lazy. But a story I can do.
Ew, kids. Now, a dog napping.
No, look, I learned my lesson. Two's plenty. Three's a crowd. So let me just say, the bulk of this came from a website called American Hauntings, Inc.
Get out of my pond.
It has nothing to do with your pond, though. You like that website?
I do.
That's how I feel when you go to Medium and all that's interesting.
Okay, that also has my stuff too.
Well, so did it for this one. We're talking about Elsie Parabek. Now, she is one of like 7 kids. Now, look, I don't know a lot about a lot, especially when it comes to geography.
Oh, God, me either. Okay.
So her mom, Carolina, was from East Bohemia, which what is now the Czech Republic. And her father, Frank Disek, who goes by Frank, was born in Bohemia. They were born in like 1869 and 67, respectively.
I love that you say them separately, but they were born in the same place.
No, one was born in East and one was born in Bohemia.
Oh.
One was born in East Bohemia, one is born in Bohemia. So Carolina and Frank got married in 1892 and came to America. He had been in the States and then went back. They got married and then they both came to America. Now, Frank worked as a painter and Carolina stayed home raising their kids.
I wish I could paint, but I don't like it. But I love to watch them on TikTok, like paint the walls.
Me
and
too.
Like they just do like the one like stripe.
Where they cut
like,
it in.
Yeah.
Me too. When we redid the bathroom last time, my neck hurts so bad from like looking up, painting, and Colby even painted the ceiling. I didn't even do that. My damn neck was hurting. So like I said, they had 7 kids, and Elsie was a 7th. So at the time of this story, Elsie is 5, and it is April 8th, 1991. Now, this is happening in, 1991. No, 1911. You didn't even catch that. The parents got married in 1892.
Look.
Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Literally, every time something ends in a two, that's what I say.
For me, it has to be a 92. And I'm like, because it's 1492.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter what it
is. If I said 2002?
Yes, because it's still, like, it rhymes with it. It's so stupid, like, that's just how my brain works.
So let's try this again. On April 8th of 1911, Elsie is at home with her mom, and she says that she's going to go around the corner to visit her, quote, auntie, or auntie. I'm sure she said it, not Southern. Now, it's 1911. It's not so weird to be in the middle of Chicago and let your five-year-old walk around the corner. It's just how things were then. Obviously, you wouldn't do that now, but, you know, we're going to judge them on 1911's lens, not 2025. So she's going over to her aunt's house, and on her way there, she sees her cousin, Josie. Now, Josie is 9. So she meets up with Josie on the street, and they find, like, a group of kids who are all hanging out listening to an organ grinder on the street. You know, like, the kind that's like, that has, like, the monkey.
What?
You know, the instrument that they grind, they turn, and it's like, dun, dun, dun. I don't know if that's the tune that it plays, but it has, like, a monkey with them usually. He didn't have a monkey, but it's usually the setup. No?
Well, I know the did, 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 did.
Okay, that's not the tune that they only play.
Oh.
It was like a box.
Oh.
And they would, and it would play music.
I had no idea.
A street organ, according to Wikipedia, is played by an organ grinder, is a French automatic mechanical pneumatic organ designed to be mobile enough to play its music on the street.
Okay, but what's it sound like?
That one song, there's like a sheet going through it that it's reading.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you don't understand this.
No, I do understand it now.
Okay. This is literally the smallest part of the story, but here we go back to it.
Well, an organ grinder, I've never heard of it.
I immediately knew what they were talking about with an organ grinder.
Never.
Okay. So the kids are watching the organ grinder and they're like, do, 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 you know, dancing to the music, loving it, playing. And then, now, this part, I'm not 100% sure of. Y'all are like, God damn it, that always happens when she tells old stories. There's this podcast I was listening to, but I'm not going to tell you the name of it because it'll give shit away. Don't let me forget to tell y'all the name of it later.
I mean, you've already said the kidnapping.
But American Hauntings, Inc. says that the organ grinder, like, moved positions on the street. Like, he went around the corner to play somewhere else. He's probably like, get these fucking kids away from me. You're interrupting my tips. But that podcast that shall remain nameless right now, don't let me forget to tell you later, they said that the organ grinder stayed there.
So my question is, the organ grinder, they just purchased sheet music and did it with their hand? Like,
I don't fucking know, Donna. I think so.
So they were basically like a DJ.
Yeah.
Okay. A DJ or a music box, because that's what the music box used to do, too.
So either way, the kids got tired of the music. And so whether from he walked away or and they'd followed him, but then they were like, fuck this guy. Or he just was like, stop playing, get away from me. And they got tired of it. But either way, all the kids were like, okay, we're over the organ grinder. We're going to move on. Elsie was like, nah, I'm going to stay back here. Catch y'all later. And the kids were like, okay, come with us. And she was like, no, I'm going to stay here. Fast forward to a few hours later, and Elsie's mom, Carolina, gets to the sister's house, to the auntie's house, and is like, oh my God, are you okay? Like, I know she's been here a while. Like, she's a five-year-old girl. Like, are you over her? I'm so sorry. And the sister's like, the fuck are you talking about? And she's like, Elsie, she was coming over here. And she's like, no, she wasn't ever here. So her mom kind of just thought, oh, well, then she's got to be with her friends in the neighborhood because it's, again, 1911. She can't just boop, 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 call everybody to see what's up. So she's like, oh, she must be at some of her friend's house. And on American Hauntings, Inc., they say that she was like, oh, she may just be spending the night at somebody's house and come in the morning. I'm like, what?
What?
That's weird to me for 1911 to, you know, even then to be like, oh, well, she must just be randomly staying at the house.
Yeah, like how? Because you have no idea if she's actually missing.
Right.
Staying, whatever. Like, there has to be some communication, right?
Well, when Frank gets home from work that night, he's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, where's Elsie? And her mom's like, I don't actually know. She was supposed to go over to the sister's house, and she never came, so I think she's just out with friends. And he's like, what do you mean you just think she's out with friends? Like, you don't know? And she's like, I don't know. And he's like, okay, well, we're going to the police. So they go to the police, and the police are kind of leaning more towards Carolina's side. They're like, yeah, she's probably just with friends, but hit me up in the morning if she's not there yet. Well, the next morning, she doesn't come, and so they go back to police, and then they're like, oh, fuck, she's missing. The problem is, as they're canvassing the neighborhood, they get a little boy that comes up to them, and he's like, hey, mister. He says that he saw a, quote, gypsy wagon that night, and that they were the ones that took her. Now, the Romani people, also are people who are known as gypsies, were people who, even still, but especially at this time, were very, like, I feel like preyed upon for, like, being blamed for crimes and that kind of thing. And this was no different. And so this kid tells police that he saw a gypsy wagon and that there were women in the wagon and that one of them was holding a kid. But then it was like, well, I actually didn't see the kid. I just know that there was a kid that looked like they were covered up. But the boy didn't even know if it was like a boy or a girl, or just saw two women with a kid.
Yeah.
Maybe that may or may not have been crying. Cause he's like, I didn't know there was, I didn't even really see him. I just, they were just crying. So like, it was not a good eyewitness.
Right. That person's all up in the Kool-Aid and don't even know the flavor.
So this story kind of was giving me the cringe because everything says, like, this whole thing is blamed on, quote, the gypsies. And a quick Goog search tells you that while some Romani people have embraced the word gypsy and don't want to lose that, it seems like most prefer to be referred to as Romani people. So just know that that's how I'm going to refer to them in this story. But it was just the fear in this whole thing of that, you know, she was kidnapped by gypsies. And it was just like this whole thing that came into account here, and it just preyed upon people's fears and like xenophobia and all of the things of anybody that's different than them. But I feel like for the culture, it's almost like how the LGBTQ community has like taken back queer, you know? So I don't know if it's like that, but anyway, but I'm going to say the Romani people. There was a camp in the area where some Romani people lived in, like, with their wagons and tents and all the things. And so they went through those camps to speak with the people to see if anybody had seen anything. Could they find Elsie? You know, just to do some investigation, you know, boots on the ground type stuff. The other thing that really made this, like, theory kind of take hold was there was a young girl named Lillian Wolf who, just 4 years prior to this, was abducted by someone who was Romani. And so it was like, oh my God, it's the same thing, yada, yada, yada. Because there was this fear and this like stereotype that the Romani people would kidnap young girls with like blonde hair, blue eyes. And so they were like, oh my God, because Elsie was blonde hair, blue eyed, like had cute dimples, you know, the whole thing. And so they were like, just, this was just really the hold that everybody believed of what actually happened to her. So they go through like all of the camps, they canvass the area, all the things, and they can't find Elsie. So Frank, her dad, is like, look, $50 is all I got, but I will offer this up as a reward for someone to please bring my baby home. It's about $1,200 in today's money.
Okay, that's something.
It's about my life savings, too.
Same.
And so you also have to think about the language barriers that people are experiencing, because we'll see later that while her parents spoke English, they couldn't read English and stuff. So it's just interesting about like how they would have to get translators and all of that. And so this was just like crossing cultures and people interacting with people that I feel like they maybe not would have in their like everyday life. But it seems like it really did bring people together.
Yeah.
Now, the police searched some, quote, Italian neighborhoods. A girl had been seen that fit Elsie's description, that she had been seen with an organ grinder.
Mm.
Now, that's kind of too where I'm like, okay, so did the organ grinder really leave? Like, did he really go around the corner to play somewhere else? And the kids were like, nah, we're bored with him. Or were the kids bored with him and he stayed right there where Elsie was?
So exactly what you said before.
But that's what I'm saying. Like that, even though that's not a key, but like, I feel like that's important.
Why?
Because it's unsolved.
Oh, God.
That's the podcast I wouldn't tell you about before.
The
podcast I wouldn't tell you earlier was called Unsolved Murders, True Crime Stories. I think this is 2 weeks in a row.
It is, because Who's in Truth was unsolved too.
Well, I mean, it's still unsolved. They just unsealed records.
Yeah.
So you can see, though, why I feel like it's really important that we know, did the organ grinder really just go somewhere else? Or was said organ grinder really involved?
I mean, I feel like even if he went somewhere else, she could have just walked over there because she still wanted to hear the music.
But I don't know if she stayed back to hear the music. Or if she was like, they were going to play somewhere else, and she was like, oh, well, I'm just going to keep on going to my aunt's house.
Okay, yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And police got reports, like, all over the place, because when you Google this story, there's, like, one picture of her that's the only known picture of her. It's some, like, drawn, hand-drawn picture that literally could be any kid. It's not like a fucking sketch of her that you even today could be like, oh, yeah, I could recognize who that is, you know?
Yeah, I feel that.
So it's like when she went missing, she had on a red dress, black stockings, and it was like anytime anybody was seen in a red dress, it was like, that's got to be her. It's a red dress.
Right. But I feel that her being the seventh child and me being the fourth child, because I had like just a few pictures. My sisters and my brother had albums full.
Well, and two, the family didn't have a lot of money, so I'm sure it costs a lot of fucking money to have someone come and sketch you. And not only that, to get seven fucking kids to sit their asses still while Bob Ross painted their happy trees. So the police start to drag the canals in the area to look for bodies, because at this point, it's been a few days and close to a week. And they still don't know where she is. They have no leads. I mean, they're getting tips, but they still just don't know anything. But remember how I told you that they had gone to those Romani camps? They were told that there was this one wagon that had left and was heading for Illinois. Well, a different part in Illinois, because Chicago's in Illinois. See, told you geography. They were heading for Round Lake. So the police go there to look, and there's another encampment, and they're like, hey, do y'all know these people? Have you seen them? Have you seen this girl? The problem is that the local people didn't wait for the Chicago people to get there to question them. They did it themselves. And so it, of course, spooked the people in the camp, because they're like, fuck, they're going to try to pin something on us that we didn't do. So they dispersed like in the middle of the night. And then, of course, they went to Volo, Illinois, probably spent saying that wrong. And then everybody's like, oh my God, we saw Elsie. She was drugged. She was covered in a blanket. Like, these people had her, you know? So then they follow the wagon's encampment further and further until they are like trying to follow them to catch them to see if Elsie is with them. But when they do, it's nobody that even looked like Elsie. It was just a little girl about her same age. So on April 17th, the police got a call about a man at a hotel in Western Springs, Illinois. Now, this was an anonymous call. And they were like, hey, we saw her at a hotel with this man. They go, nada. And so it was just like tip after tip. I'm not going to go through every single tip that they got, because we'd be here all night. Then there was talk about, was there this $500 ransom note? But turns out that that wasn't true at all. And then Lillian Wolf, that I told you about, she comes to police. She's like 11 at this time. And she's like, hey, guys, I can help you because, you know, I know what happened to me and, you know, kind of learn the inner workings. So maybe I can help you. And they're like, cool. Will you lead us a search party kind of thing? And she's like, yeah, 11-year-old me will do it. They go to the prison where one of the guys that did kidnap Lillian was being held because, you know, he got caught.
Wait, Lillian went too?
No. The police. And they're like, bitch, tell us. Like, we've got another girl. Tell us. And he's like, well, I don't know, but you need to contact Elijah George. He was known as, quote, King of the Gypsies. From what I understand of what that means is that basically he was like a liaison for the Romani people to, well, everybody, police, everything was kind of like their liaison to help their community. So the police go find Elijah George and he's like, no, we didn't do this. I don't, like, this is not on us. Nobody in my group did this. Now, another neighbor on April 23rd, this part was on Wikipedia. I didn't see this on Donna's website. But on April 23rd, a neighbor said, I saw Elsie at 11 a.m. and she was with an organ grinder and was talking to a man, like, on the opposite side of the street, but I didn't know him. But, like, nothing came of that because they never found the guy that she was talking to. And I don't know. I never saw anything where the organ grinder was even interviewed. And he may have been, but I never saw anything of that.
Well, the organ grinder, like, the street organ, is big enough for a little kid to fit in.
That's so true, though. So, cut to, it's, like, April 30th now. And the principal superintendent lady was like, all the kids need to do searches during their spring break.
Oh, hell no.
That's weird, right?
Yes.
Okay, I thought so too, but...
I mean, one, kids doing the searches. Two, during their spring break.
Yeah, I feel like, why wouldn't you have just been like, let's take a day off of school and do... I don't know. I just felt like that was weird to ask kids. I feel like that's very traumatizing for them.
Yes.
Because it's one thing if a kid is like, I want to help, like, that's my friend, whatever, I want to help. I feel like that's okay, but to be like, every kid you need to participate feels traumatizing to me.
Yeah, and I'd be like,
Because could you imagine if that kid found her?
Right.
I mean, truly. And I mean, they're not worried about evidence, but then all the trampling of evidence that they would probably do if they did find her, they wouldn't know to be like, oh my God, don't touch her, you know?
Right.
The family even brought in a medium, but nothing came of that. Now, this is where I'm like, are you kidding me? At some point, not long after Elsie disappeared, her dad started getting letters. And they were anonymous letters. But they were written in English, and so the dad couldn't read them. He could speak English, but he couldn't read English. So he asked the neighbor to translate them for him. And the neighbor's like, ooh, I don't really want to translate these because these are bad.
Ooh.
And he's like, well, fucking tell me what they say. Well, the letters, like, accuse the parents of being shitty parents and mistreating her. And basically, that's why the kidnapper took her. Like, the letters were from the kidnapper being
right.
Like, I took her because you mistreated her. And the dad, instead of being like, hey, police, I'm getting these letters, the dad was so pissed that he burned the letters.
Right, because he didn't want to look bad.
I'm like, are you fucking, you burned these letters? These letters could have been, are potentially evidence. Now, they could have been just somebody being a dick, but they really could have been evidence.
Yeah.
Conversely, we see how the Romani people were treated, and her family, they're immigrants too.
Mm-hmm.
And so they could have been fearful that if there were these letters saying that they mistreated her, then maybe they would get their kids taken away. Maybe they would get arrested for, you know, harming her for something they didn't do. So, you know, that could be why he burned them. But I'm just like, no, it could have been evidence. But also, I can understand if that's why he did it.
Yeah.
So they upped and upped and upped the reward money. The Bohemian Charitable Association offered a $500 reward which is that today's money or their money?
Because it had to be their money.
$500? Do you know how much that would be? The dad had $50, and that was equivalent to almost $1,200.
Right.
So that's a lot.
That's a lot.
But like I said, literally every time a kid in a red dress was spotted, the police were getting calls. But I'm like, okay, do you really think she's still in her red dress? Like, if she is kidnapped and she's, like, walking around the streets with other people that you're seeing her, would she be in the same red dress? Probably not. Like, why was that still everybody's like, a red dress, a red dress, a red dress?
Right. And also, like, how popular was red dresses back then? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Was it scarce or not?
I don't know,
but it's giving me Carmen Sandiego vibes. You know, it's because she was in red. Well, like maroonish, I guess. Why am I so bad at geography? When I watched Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, like every god dang day.
I don't know. I just remember watching that and going, I don't know how they know these things.
I mean, same. But like, what? But I can still do the skinnamarinky-dinky-do.
No, you just didn't say it right.
Oh, shit. Okay, maybe not.
Skinnamarinky dinky dink, skinnamarinky do. I fucking love you. Okay, so around May 9th, there was an electrical engineer named George Scully who was at this Lockport power plant, and they see something floating in the drainage canal. Now, at first, they thought it was just a dead animal, but then after a few hours, they were like, Hold on. That's a body. And it's clearly the body of a child.
Was she in a red dress?
Yes.
Holy shit!
So the undertaker comes and takes the body, and they bring in Elsie's father to try to identify her. And he's like, it looks like her, but he says that basically only a mother would know. And so they bring in Carolina to identify her.
Also, I feel like you're still a parent. You should know.
Well, her mom comes in and she says, it's you, my darling. Thank God we found you and you're not in the hands of gypsies. So like the family was still so staunch that that's what happened to her.
Yeah.
Well, the family is just like her parents are just beside themselves. Like they are so upset, bawling, crying. And they're trying to figure out, like, what happened to her. And at first, when the police and the undertaker are looking at the body, they're like, well, it looks like she's been in the water for about a month. Basically, like, she's been dead since the day she went missing.
Wow.
And so, at first, really, there was, like, almost, like, two camps of thoughts of what happened to her. Because, again, for the 400th time, it's 1911. Autopsies aren't wonderful. But at first they were like, there doesn't really look like there's any like trauma to her body. So some of the like coroners were like, I think she probably just fell in the water and drowned. But then others were like, clearly not. There's definitely trauma to her body. Like, the fuck are you talking about? And so they did an autopsy. They looked at her lungs to see if there was water in her lungs, and there wasn't. So they knew that she had died before she ended up in the water. So her mom, at first, being like, I think maybe she drowned, she is like steadfast that she was murdered. Her mom is like, I have been seeing, like, essentially visions that she was murdered, and again, blaming the Romani people, that they killed her, et cetera, et cetera. As they did a more legit autopsy, they found that she had been sexually assaulted. They called it, quote, attacked, which that's what they mean.
Yeah.
But also, then it said that they saw deep cuts on the left side of her face. So I'm like, how could those first coroner / undertakers be like, she probably just fell in the water and drowned. It doesn't look like murder. She has fucking cuts on her face.
Maybe they were like, oh, she hit rocks.
Maybe, but like, I feel like you would be able to tell even then they would know pre and post mortem, you know?
Yeah.
But then they also said that she had marks on her throat indicating she had been choked. So I'm like, again, how did they just think this was all damage from the water, the first people, or were they just dumb?
Could have been both.
Really shitty at their jobs. But it seems like no one really could kind of agree on what happened. So they just said that it was murder, but her cause of death was unknown. Now, when the family did have the funeral, they didn't have a lot of money because they had used all their money trying to find out what had happened to her.
Yeah.
And so a judge gave them $25 for the funeral and was like, I will try to get you more. And then they raised another $50, like having a benefit for them.
Mm-hmm.
Her funeral was on May 12th, and it was at her family's house. And there were over 3,000 people there.
Holy shit. Did they all use a bathroom?
I don't know.
Also, this is a very timely thing. Again, with like being at the end of April, mm-hmm. May.
Yeah, not planned. So after the funeral, police hone in on a suspect named Joseph Canesti. Joseph was also bohemian, but he was like a peddler that really kind of stayed to himself. And he lived in this shack that was near a drainage canal. And he would try to like get kids to come to his house with him. Now, his landlord was like, I want no part of this. Like, fuck you. Quit bringing kids home.
Yeah.
And he continued. And so she kicked him out. Now, when the police came around, they were like, hey, where is he? And she's like, oh, he brought kids here all the time. So I kicked him out. The police go through all his stuff that was left at the house. And Joseph gets word that the police are looking at him. He was, I guess, so distraught. I don't know. But he died by suicide by jumping in front of a train.
Oh my gosh.
And get this, 5 days after he died by suicide, they cleared him of any wrongdoing.
How? I wonder how.
They never really said of like what made them clear him, but did he die by suicide because he was involved? I don't think so, because they cleared him. Was he involved in something else that maybe he felt like was getting brought to light with the other kids?
Right.
Was he a bohemian man, an immigrant that was like, they're going to frame me for something, so right. I don't want to go to prison? I don't know.
Yeah, because it does seem like they were targeting immigrants, though. Like,
yes.
With the Romani people, with the Italian people, with the bohemian community.
Yes.
Like,
now, there was another guy that, I'm going to be honest, that the little bit that I know about this part of the story is from the Unsolved Murders True Crime Stories podcast. They have a really good two-part episode on this, but they do like reenactments and stuff. So anyway, but they talked a little bit about him. But when I was looking this story up, a website came up called Escape Into Life, and it's called Two Worlds of Henry Darger. So I was like, so what does Henry have to do with this? And I saw Elsie's picture, and then I started scrolling some more. And then I saw this art that he does, and it like, I immediately closed it. I was like, close Google, close Google, close Google, because it was like a hand-drawn kid that showed their genitalia.
Uh-uh.
And I was like, get me the fuck out of this.
Right.
Like, I want no part of this. But he's this like really weird guy that he was like a janitor, I think at a hospital or something. And that's all he did. Like he went to work and he went home. Like he barely talked to his neighbors. He didn't seem like he had any friends, but his neighbors would hear him talking to all these other people, but it wasn't other people. It was him acting as those characters. And then he wrote, yeah, it would be like him doing a female's voice responding to him. And then he responds to himself, you know.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we might have imaginary boyfriends and stuff, but we didn't answer for them.
Yeah. I just talked as myself. Oh, you think I'm so funny? Really?
Yeah. Silence, silence, silence.
Yeah. I wasn't like, yeah, I think you're beautiful. Like, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
So clearly there's a lot of mental illness here. Maybe a dissociative identity disorder. I don't know. He had some art that I think is actually worth a lot of money now, but then he wrote this like 15,000 page book that Elsie is like the main character. It's all about these kids that got murdered. And so he was a bit of a suspect like way later on, but still to this day, we do not know what happened to Elsie. Her dad, 2 years to the day of the anniversary of her funeral, passed away, and he was only 45.
Fuck, that's young.
Yes. Like, he literally could not take it. The parents were so distraught and so broken by this. Her mom ended up living until 1927. So only, like, what, 14 years later? So, I mean, she was maybe 60.
Yeah.
I just think, too, like, think about her six siblings, too. Like, what their life was like, their father passing away, who was the breadwinner. He was a painter. Like, you know, they didn't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, what did they do after that? Like, how did they live? Like, did mom go back to work? Like, not only was their family destroyed from their baby sister being missing and then murdered, mm-hmm. not knowing who did it, then a parent dies because he can't deal with it. Like, their entire world was thrown upside down.
For real.
I think it was the organ grinder.
Probably was.
I think that he didn't round the corner. The kids got tired of it and went off to play, and she stayed, and he snatched her up.
I mean, it's kind of like Pied Piper sounding. Like, he had the mm-hmm. music, entranced her, and snatched her up. But I hate that she died, but I'm glad that it seemed like she had died quickly rather than being kept. And since we know she was sexually assaulted, it wasn't just, you know, like, she was alive for a whole month being kept, like, as a captive and all of this. Like, it seems like she was killed.
Yeah. I mean, she was, like, in the same clothes and everything. Like, it was quick, I think.
Yeah. That's the only solace in this.
For sure. I'm just glad that her family at least got enough answers that her body was found. And that they weren't left wondering all these years. I mean, they were left wondering all these years what happened to her. But at least they had some sense of closure.
Yeah. Well, I have a request for next week. Not an unsolved one.
I know. Isn't that so bizarre how I do, like, batches of things?
Uh-huh. Well, I'm tired of it. Because I'm a fan of closure.
I know. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, for my story, I fucked up.
Oh.
I fucked up big time.
Uh-oh.
So I thought this was going to be a past live story, and then...
A past life story?
Yeah.
Or we did it as a live?
No. Like it was someone who said, I used to be someone else.
Because you said past live.
Oh. Well, you know what?
We've done, like, one live show in our entire podcasting careers. Not really. I think it's been two. And I talked about one already. So the fuck are you talking about?
Right. Yeah. No, a past life story.
Okay.
And I was like, ooh, this is gonna be good. But then, I mean, it's still good. But then it's like, oh, wait, what's going on here? So we're talking about Anda Anderson, a woman who claimed to be none other than the Grand Duchess Anastasia Romanov. Or if you're saying her name correctly, it's Anastasia. I have to say Anastasia because that is one of my favorite movies. Don't you like that movie too?
Never seen it.
Wait, what? It's such an underrated animated movie.
Yeah, never seen it.
Oh my God, I love it. Okay, so if you don't know who Anastasia is, she's the youngest daughter of Tsar Nicholas II of Russia. And like I said, I'm obsessed with that movie, and I was really excited about this. And I'm still excited about it, but it's not a past life. Like, I thought she remembered things and did all the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, one that. So first, we're going to start with the family. The Romanovs were the who's who of Imperial Russia. The family as a whole had ruled Russia for over 300 years.
Damn.
So talk about old money, talk about old power, all the things. Like, that was his family. Nicholas II, Tsarina Alexandra, and their five children, Olga, Tatiana, Maria, Anastasia, and Alexei, lived in luxury. Like, we think our miracle-made sheets are luxurious. They were, like, legit having, like, you know, the big ballrooms, Fabergé eggs, all of the things.
Fabergé eggs. She's very intense about those.
It reminds me of a slot machine that I used to play, and you would pick the eggs, like the Fabergé eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you picked one, you would go up some more and all the things. And I was like, oh, love that.
I remember that.
That was one of those that you could play for hours because it was cheaper, you know, like it wasn't like you have to play $5 a spin because there's 39 lines. Anyway, if you can't tell, I really want to go to the casino. But again,
termites.
Uh-huh. The termites have terminated the casino going right now. Anyway, if you don't really know anything about Anastasia and stuff, you have to have heard the name Rasputin.
Yes.
And Rasputin's little sidekick in the movie was one of my favorites. Anyway, that was a completely made up character. But still. So, Tsarina Alexandra was deeply religious. And so Rasputin was like all into like mysticism, and he was thought to be like a healer and stuff like that. He ended up being in their orbit because of their son, Alexei. But before we get to Alexei, this is kind of sad to me because everyone was so upset that Anastasia was born a girl. She was the fourth girl. And at that time, like, they didn't want to be the ones who stopped their birthright. You know what I mean? Like, 300 years, and how dare you only have girls? And so they were really let down that Anastasia was a girl. And you know that seeps out.
Yes.
The disappointment, the absolutely, all the things. And then that kind of led the people to say that Tsarina Alexandra was cursed, and that's why they couldn't produce an heir. But then Alexei was born, and that was their only son, but they only needed one. So it was like, okay, cool. The thing is that they found out that he was a hemophiliac, which meant that his blood couldn't clot. He's the opposite of me. So if he got just a little nick, he could bleed out. It was very life-threatening, and they had to keep that as a secret because that means he's their only heir. Mm-hmm. And if someone knew that, like, hey, you don't even have to, like, really do anything to him, like, you don't have to murder him to murder him.
Right.
You know, like, it's literally could be the smallest little thing and he could die from it. So they kind of kept to themselves. Kind of like the guy that you spoke about, how he went to work, came home, kept to himself. Mm-hmm. They kept to themselves. It was only like a few doctors, Rasputin, and like some of their servants that were allowed in their castle and stuff, like their palace. They kind of like turned away from being public figures. But with all of that, you know, they were top of the top until people, like, really didn't like Nicholas II because he got them into World War One. They had inequality. It had, like, political unrest, all of that. But when he decided to be involved in World War One, it was like, okay, well, y'all are living behind your palace, like, you know, the glitz and the glam, but we're starving. We're the ones who are having to go to war, and we can't even fucking feed our family and stuff. So they were really upset. And in 1917, a revolution swept through and Nicholas was forced to abdicate. So again, 3 centuries worth of rule, like, and they were just so happy that they had Alexei, didn't matter because he had to abdicate because he was not the people's choice. So with that, like, they weren't just, oh, okay, go about your life. No, he was a fucking czar. You can't just be like, okay, abdicate and live as a normal person. So they were taken basically as hostages. They were placed under house arrest, and they were just kind of shuffled place to place because the Bolsheviks, I think is how you say it, that was one of the revolutionary groups. They rose to power and wanted to keep him down because if he was free, there were people who would still like want to follow him and do all the things. Now, even though that they were kept under house arrest and all of this, they still thought they were safe. But on the night of July 17th, 1918, the Romanovs were told that they were being moved for their safety. And so they were led down into the basement and then they were executed, their entire family. And it was pretty chaotic, pretty horrifying because they were being lined up and they're like, we're going to move you. It's going to be okay. All the things. And then the soldiers came in and just like had gunfire going all over the place. But what had happened was the kids, because they thought they were being moved. So Tsarina Alexandra had put like jewels in the kids' clothing, like sewn them in, all the things like, hey, because when we make it out of here, like we have to sell something, we have to do all the things to have the money, like we're going to keep it on y'all because they're not going to do anything to the kids, you know, whatever. But when they did the gunfire, it didn't kill the kids all automatically like it did the adults because they had the jewels all over. And so it was like shields, basically.
Yeah.
So that meant that they got the bayonets and had to like stab them and all the things. Like it was very bloody, very chaotic, and just terrible. And with that, like it wasn't just the family, it was like some of their servants, their doctor for Alexei, just a brutal fucking massacre. When the dust settled, the Bolsheviks claimed the whole family was gone. But because of confusion, and it kind of took a while to confirm that they, you know, they were like, oh no, everything's okay. Okay, actually, they're all gone. People were questioning, like, did everyone die or did some people make it out? And that's where the rumors came from. What if one or more of the Romanovs had survived? And so a lot of people thought it was a 17-year-old daughter, Anastasia, who had escaped. Now, fast forward 2 years to February 18th, 1920, and that's where Anna Anderson enters the story. She was just a young woman, and she was seen on Bindler Bridge in Berlin. And then she was seen jumping off the bridge and trying to die by suicide. Well, there was a passing cop, and he was like, not on my watch, went to the water, pulled her out, and even though she was okay, she refused to talk, she refused to do anything, and so they put her in a mental hospital. And she still wouldn't talk to anyone. They called her Fräulein Unbekannt. I think that's how it said. You know me and pronunciations. But that translates to Miss Unknown. Basically, a she-she way of saying Jane Doe. And for 2 years, she remained an enigma. No one knew who she really was. No one knew anything about her. She didn't talk to anyone. She didn't do anything. She was silent. She was withdrawn. And then one day, she said that she was Anastasia Romanov. So cue the dramatic music.
Dun-dun-dun.
Because, okay, I don't think she just came up with it. Like, there were multiple different things that said, like, she had come up with it. But then an Unsolved Mysteries that I watched said, no, it was someone who I feel like I would be. Her name was Clara. And she was in the same ward of the Dahldorf Asylum in December 1921. Now, Clara was a reader of all the little, like, royal magazines and everything. Basically, it was, you know, like, the people and Us Weekly and what was that teeny bopper one that we always did?
Tiger Beat.
Tiger Beat. That was those of 1920, okay? So she was like all into the royalty. And when she saw Anna, she was like, God, she looks so familiar. And one day she was reading the magazine and she was like, oh, she's a Romanov. That's who she is. That's why she's so like withdrawn and everything, because she survived this massacre. Now, the thing is Clara did not think that she was Anastasia. She thought that she was Tatiana, but Anna never confirmed nor denied, just kind of did whatever. But she did start speaking more, and the staff noticed that Anna spoke German, but it seemed to have a Russian accent to it. And I honestly don't know why she started talking after this. Like, if it was just like, it all came back to her and she thought, oh my God, that's exactly who I am or whatever. But she did start talking and she did say that she was part of the Romanov family, but she never said who at first. And a lot of people believed her. Like, she was thin and frail and her face was scarred and didn't really look like what you would think the Grand Duchess would look like, you know, because people, even now we think royalty and we think like they're going to be like the most absolutely gorgeous people in the world and all the things. And I mean, money can't buy you class. What's that?
Thank you, Luann Davis. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't just work that way because genetics. But
especially the further you go back in history, because people were like having kids with their first cousins to keep it in the bloodline.
Right.
So there were a lot of genetic disorders.
Yes. But she had the blue eyes like Nicholas II and like dark brown hair and stuff. And they're like, that do be looking like one of the Romanovs, and particularly Anastasia. And she started to share details about their private life. And it was like, you know, details that only Anastasia would be able to tell you. She recounted the layout of the palaces, you know, like family names, like little pet names that they had for each other, how the dynamic of their family worked. And so word got around, of course, and some of the servants who had worked with the Romanovs were like, holy fuck, thank God someone survived. And, you know, it gave everyone hope. Now, the first person that they called in, because they were like, is this who this is? We have no fucking clue.
Yeah.
Because, again, she was around the same age. She had tried to die by suicide. And what would you think, like, someone who had survived her family being massacred and having to be on the run, she's not accustomed to that. She like has nowhere to go. She doesn't know who's her enemy, who's her friend, all the things. Like, so she might be driven to that point. And people said about the scarring is that it was like from the bayonets, you know, and stuff. So it's like, yes, she scarred up, but like she survived an execution that everyone knew was chaotic. Anyway, so they called Baroness Sophie Buxhoveden. I definitely butchered that. But she was a lady in waiting to Tsarina Alexandra, the mom, and had personally, like, you know, been with the Romanov family. Now, Sophie took one look at her and she said, you are not Tatiana. You're not tall enough to be her. You don't look like her, all the things. And Anna was like, I didn't say I was Tatiana, which she didn't. Okay. You know, it was the Clara girl. It was me who was wrong. But Sophie was like, I don't care what kind of answer you give me. You're not a Romanov. You look Polish more so than Russian. And this is all a hoax. Like, I don't know what you think you're going to get from it, but no. Then there was Madame Tolstoy, which is very hard for me to say because it sounds like I'm saying it wrong, but it's right.
Yeah.
She was a noble woman who had lived, like, you know, with the Romanovs and all the things, but she wasn't as quick to dismiss her as Sophie was. She said that there was something very familiar about Anna. She said that her eyes, her behavior, like all of that really made her feel like she was Anastasia, because Anastasia was a fiery little spirited kid. And this girl like had that like little bite to her. You know how she was like, I didn't say I was Tatiana. Like you're assuming.
Yeah, you made that assumption and now that makes an ass out of you and me.
Right. And there were several people, but someone named Glib Botkin was the doctor of Eugene Botkin, their personal physician who died with them that night. He had known the Grand Duchess all his life, too, because, you know, like they played as kids. They did all the things.
All I can think about is when Tom Cruise told Matt Lauer to not be so glib.
Oh, my God. Right.
Do you remember how obsessed you were with that? You said glib all the time from that.
Yes, because that was such a weird thing.
Don't be so glib, Matt. Anyway, okay, continue. I can't believe that you didn't just say that.
I know. So he came rushing into the asylum and was like, I just want my friend back. I want to make sure she's okay. Like, I've lost my father, but if I know someone survived that night, like, it would give him some type of hope. And when he met Anna, he was overcome with emotion. He was so convinced that this was Anastasia. He became a defender of her, very devoted to defending her. And he said that she knew intimate family details and no imposter could know that. He said that they both had a childhood game that they would play together, and it was called Funny Animals, which he would draw an animal and it would be like dressed in human clothing, doing something human-like. And, you know, because it's a funny animal. Basically, anything that came on Nick Jr. would have been his drawing.
Right.
Like little bear, all the things. But he would give the picture to Anastasia, and then she would make up a story to explain what was going on in the picture. Which honestly sounds like a fun game. Well, when he was at the asylum trying to figure out if she was legit or not, she was like, did you ever keep any of those pictures and stuff?
What?
Right. And he was like, yeah, actually. And so she looked through them and she had like remembered stories and they were just like, holy fuck. Like, this is what we used to do. This is so Anastasia. Like, I don't understand why you people are saying this. Like, no one else would know this. But for the rest of the time, it really would be so divided. Other people were, as you always like to say, staunch.
Do I say that a lot?
Yes, you said it in your story today.
Oh.
But like staunch disbelievers.
Naysayers, if you will.
Yes. And then there were other people who were like, no, that is Anastasia. Like, yeah, you don't want to believe it, but like, it's fucking true. And the more this story picked up, Anna started to reveal things, you know, and because they were like, how did you survive? And she said that she, again, had survived because of the jewels that were sewn into her gown, which is true. And that when they were carting off her family, they found her alive. And it was this like a guard who was kind of sympathetic and stuff. And he was basically like, we don't see anything, go.
Yeah, run.
Like, yeah. And so everyone's like, fuck, holy shit. Like, thank God for this guard and, you know, all the things. Because also she's the, you know, if you're looking at this, you're like, wow, that could happen.
Yeah.
But what did happen is Anna's life was a circus because there were supporters. There were the naysayers. They had legal battles, all the things everywhere, because people were like, yes, no, scam artist, real duchess, all the things. And on Unsolved Mysteries, I didn't hear this anywhere else, but they said that her family who had come, like, that were like cousins and things, they were like, we wish we could help you more, but we just don't have, you know, the money like we had and all of that. And she's like, wait, daddy had money that he like squirreled away kind of. And then when she told them that, they were like, wait, if we say she's Anastasia, she's going to get the bulk of that money. So
let's say it's her.
No.
Oh, just kidding.
They're like, we don't want it to be her. We want to find it for ourselves and divvy it up with the cousins instead of his heir, like, you know, his direct kid who would be privy for all of it.
Yeah.
You're like, and so no, they wanted it. No, they wanted to be greedy.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking like they couldn't have it without her, like, because they didn't know where it was.
Mm.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. No. Well, that's, again, what Unsolved Mysteries had said. And so, like, that's when people started, like, turning against her, saying, like, oh, actually, she doesn't look like Anastasia. And actually, you know, all the things. Which, again, money does have power.
Yeah.
Now, Anna didn't have money, but she had friends and had places because some of those people really thought she was the Grand Duchess Anastasia. They paid for all her legal battles. She fought.
Sorry, can we back up? What are the legal battles? Like, she's not really trying to get anything. So, like, why are people...
She is, because she's trying to say that she is Anastasia.
Okay. Because at first I thought she was just, like, existing, and people were like, oh my God, you look like her. Are you her? And she's, like, not saying anything, but now she's saying, and so they're, like, trying to... Okay.
Yeah, like, she was, like, not saying anything, and then people started saying stuff, and she's like, it is I, Anastasia. And then she's like, oh, actually, I really am her, you know, all the things. And so people are like, no, you're not. And because that's like saying that the whole family was executed. Oh, but there's, you know, a royal who still survived and could, you know, have all the say of all the things. Like, she would be inheriting a lot of shit.
Because I'm like, if she's just saying it's her and she's just like moving on about her life in this mental institution, like,
no,
then just let it be.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
And she was in court over the years for 30 years, which was
what?
Uh-huh. Which was the longest running like court case of identity, like saying that she was someone who people didn't believe she was because she wanted to get her name legally changed and all of that, because she had said like, no, that's what my name is, and they're like, no, it's not. And she's like, yes, it is. But no one had anything.
My biggest thing is, why now? Why all of a sudden are you like, oh yep, I'm her, change everything?
Well, it was just 2 years, so it's like she could have been running, and she was found in Berlin, so it's like she could have been hiding out. And then she was like, I'm tired of this life. Tried to die by suicide. The cop was like,
yeah,
here I come to save the day. And she's like, let me be. And he said, I'll let you be in the asylum. Yeah. And then she's like, fuck, I'm here. No one's going to believe me anyway. I'm safer here where no one knows me. And then this girl, AKA Donna.
Pushy as fuck. Is uh-huh. like, that's you?
Uh-huh. I'm like, are you Jonathan Taylor Thomas? I have your centerfold here.
Centerfold.
And so she was like, it is I. But over the 30 years, the 3 decades of this that was going on in court, there were lots of theories that came up. It was like playing whack-a-mole, because like you'd, you know, be like, nope, that's not true. Another one pop up. You know, like you couldn't get ahead.
Yeah.
Or if you... were me and you played the, it was like whack-a-mole, but it was with alligators.
Yes.
I love that one because their mouth went like, bang, 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 bang,
bang. It would be like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's what it sounded like.
You know, Anna Delvey.
Yes.
And if you don't, if you're not like Carrie and you just, she was like, yes.
Well,
but you could have been like, yeah, the girl who pretended to be blah, blah, blah. But, like, she pretended to be royalty and, like, a fucking celebrity. And these people were like, oh, yeah, cool. We got you. Like, stay with us. Do all the things and live this life. And she was just a con artist. Well, that's kind of how Anna Anderson was living, because people were like, oh yeah, come stay with us. Like, we would be honored for you to be here and, you know, all the things. So she was like, okay, because where's she going to go? But the thing is that the people who didn't believe had really good reason not to believe, because even though she did seem to know about like the Romanov family dynamic, the jewelry, their dogs, like that kind of thing, she didn't really speak Russian. She really didn't speak English, which the Romanovs knew and stuff. And so it's like, why are you not doing this? Like, why you should know. But then other people were like, it was a traumatic experience and her memory's coming back in like fragments. And so all the things. Even Anastasia's former nanny came just to be like, okay, I know her. Like, I know this little fucking brat. Like, I will be able to tell. The nanny was like, yeah, her like facial features and on her right foot, Anastasia had like a deformed toe. This girl had a deformed toe. Come to find out, is a bunion.
Oh, the fuck.
So like that's more common than you think. But that was something that was like, okay. And she said that when she was with Anna, she asked her to massage her forehead with cologne, which is something that her and Anastasia did. And that was the only one she did it with. Like, no other. That was basically her, like, being like, play with my hair.
Yeah. Also, clearly this person does not get migraines because they ain't no shot in hell you could massage my head with fucking cologne.
Which I feel like would just be like essential oils, which we do, like peppermint.
Yeah.
Carrie. Yeah. So, okay, we're going to fast forward to when Anna Anderson is 58 years old. Because remember, when this had happened first, she was like 19, 20. So she has lived in the spotlight of, is she Anastasia? Is she not Anastasia? For, again, 3 decades and stuff. Well, Anna had become very eccentric. And I can only imagine like having such polarizing views and everything of you. But she lived in like this remote German village. And she had like a little cottage. And it wasn't cute, like a Snow White cottage. No, no. This looked like she hadn't done her lawn in 30 years. Like, everything was kind of overgrown, overrun. Like, you know how ivy's very pretty, like going up like palaces. And, you know, like rich people have ivy going up their brick. She had like fucking trees grown like that. You know what I mean? Like, it looked like, does anyone live here? Yes, her and her 4 dogs and 30 cats.
30? 30?
30.
One for every year that nobody believed her.
I wonder if that's why. But yeah.
30 cats? I mean, 4 dogs, I can barely handle 2, but 30 cats?
Yeah. And she was kind of a hoarder. And, you know, like, when hoarders are hoarding, it...
Cat poop.
Old cats that had been passed away that didn't get buried all the way. And
no! Like,
it was real bad. Real bad. And with this, they were like, Anastasia would never be in this kind of thing. You know what I mean? But they said there would be someone who would live in this. And we believe her name is Franziska Chavanowska.
Who the fuck is this?
She was a Polish factory worker whose life had been kind of uprooted during World War I. Again, around the same time, everything happened. So what they said is that this person had been missing. She looked like this person that looked like Anastasia, and she did have injuries because she worked in a factory.
So she had bunions.
She had bunions, but she had injuries to her face because she accidentally like let a grenade off or something.
Oh my God.
In the factory and all the things. And now she did have some mental illness and she had been in and out of mental asylums, all the things. And she would like go missing for bouts of time. But even though people were like, this is this girl, and like, look at her, look at this girl, and then look at Anastasia, like, who do they look more like? She looks like Francisca. But people were like, no, she looks like Anastasia, and she's Anastasia, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Okay.
So then by the 1960s, Anna moved to the U.S., and she was with Glib, the guy that was like, you know, we've been friends forever. I know everything about you, all the things. Come live with me. Come do all the things. And he hooked her up with this history professor named Jack Manahan. And he was pretty wealthy. And he also was a believer that she was Anastasia. And he was also a little eccentric himself.
30 cats eccentric?
Well, he didn't have them, but together they got together and yeah, they got a lot of cats again, let their yard get overgrown, all the things.
I mean, people do that with dogs, but why do you think it's so much more common like with cats?
I think because they are more independent.
Probably.
And so, like, dogs, you would have to help them. Cats, you're just like, here's some water, here's some food. And, like, they could use the bathroom outside. And yeah. I don't know. They're just more independent. But even though, like, she was happy with Jack, who was, like, younger than her. So she was with a richer, younger man. But she was still going in and out of mental asylums. And in 1983, she was in an asylum, but he was like, not my baby, and broke her out of the asylum.
Wait, Manahan? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He was like, that's the love of my life. Like, oh, I'm just visiting her, and like fucking carted her out. Then they had a car chase. They surrendered, all the things. But 2 months after that, so in 1984, she died of pneumonia. Jack died a few years later, and he really still believed she was Anastasia. But now we're getting like closer and closer and closer to the forensic files of everything, because enter DNA testing to the chat. So in the 1990s, Russian authorities found what they believed to be the Romanov family's remains. It was in a grave. There were 5 bodies. And people had said, like, well, we knew that they were buried there, but, like, we were waiting until it was under a different rule or something, like, all the things, because if they would have exhumed the bodies, like, they could have been, like, desecrated, all the things. So in the grave, it was the Tsar Nicholas II, Tsarina Alexandra, and 3 of their daughters. But they were saying Anastasia and Alexei were missing. So again, people are like, well, fuck. Was she Anastasia? Like, we thought this was going to seal the case shut. Like, she was a fraud. But in 2007.
Oh, my God. The never-ending saga.
Right. Alexei and Anastasia were found.
Oh, I knew it.
Mm-hmm. But then they were like, okay, so if this is Anastasia, and like, again, their bodies were in bad shape, all the things. And because like, instead of the story she told where they got carted off, no, like they believe from people, like from the descendants of the people who killed them, that they put their bodies down a mine shaft and then put acid over them. And then they hid the 2 others. So like people didn't find them and they're like, huh, a family of 7 or whatever it was, you know, like it was just like a family of 5. What? That can't be them. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah. So it was, ooh. Anyway, also on the Unsolved Mysteries, there was one of the descendants. It was like the son of one of the soldiers. And I was just like, oh my God, can you imagine? Like, that's what your dad's legacy was, that he executed the Romanovs.
Yeah, but he didn't have a choice, I'm sure.
No, I know. But like, I don't know. It was just such a like a thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair because his dad wouldn't have had a choice.
Well, you don't know.
He was a soldier being told to execute, like,
if he was one of the revolutionaries, he joined that revolution.
Then I don't know about that, but I'm just saying.
But also, I'm not saying, like, I don't know. It's just like that. Those are the stories he grew up hearing.
Yeah.
So much so that you knew that he poured acid on these people.
Yeah, that's pretty shitty.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's like, whew. Anyway, so now that they have found Anastasia, all of that, they're like, but who was Anna Anderson? Who was she? In her DNA again. They took a tissue sample from Anna that was preserved from a surgery that she had, like, underwent in the 1970s. And insert Mari Povich, she was not a Romanov.
I feel like we know that.
Instead, her DNA really closely matched the living relatives of Franziska, the girl that they were like, she's a Polish factory worker. Mm-hmm. They were like, yeah, that seems like who she is. And so Franziska, just a little bit more about her, because she was a part of this story. She was Anna Anderson. She was born December 16th, 1896 in Poland. And then in 1915, after the start of World War I, she moved to Berlin to work in a factory. Now in 1916, her fiance, who was in the military, was killed. And then that, like they said, that she was so distraught, that's when she accidentally dropped the grenade at work and caused an explosion, which killed one of her coworkers right in front of her.
Oh, shit.
And gave her those head injuries that, you know, like the scars and stuff. So she became depressed. And then that's when she went into the mental asylum because, you know, she tried to die by suicide. The cop found her.
Yeah.
And all the things. But even with this, even with everything pointing that she's not a Romanov, there are still people to this day that believe she really is Anastasia.
Oh, my God.
And that they just didn't want, like, the royal family, the cousins, all the things, did not want her to actually be Anastasia. So they paid off other people. They did all the things to keep their money.
I mean, what more proof do you need? Shit.
Right?
I mean, like, literal DNA.
Like, I feel so much better knowing that they found Alexei and Anastasia, or they said another daughter. So it's like either she was one of the original daughters that they found in the mass grave, or she was with Alexei. But it makes me feel better to know, like, okay, their whole family's accounted for. And they even had, like, the servants, the doctor, like, they found them too. Because if not, you would still, like, these people would always be like, but where's Anastasia?
Yeah.
Now it's like, her body's been found.
But also, like, what about her fucking friend that was like, no, this is her?
I know.
Like, how did she know about the drawing games? I don't know.
But they said, like, you know what? If she really was a con artist, she knew how to read people. And
that's so true.
Like, if she could get out of the life that she was living, what, like, and she's like, yep, that's me. And then, you know, they're like, do you remember so-and-so? And if their inflection went up, it's like, okay, that was really a person. If they're just like, do you remember Rebecca? And she's like, nope. And they're like, oh, it was a trick. And she knew it was a trick. You know,
yeah.
Like, it's hard because people just want hope and to hold on to hope. And then they think the best of people.
I don't.
Not you. Not you, black cat energy.
Well, I mean, shit, they lie. 30 cats fucking later, we know it ain't her.
But yeah, so I really thought like, oh, Anna Anderson was Anastasia in a past life. Mm-mm. And then the more I got into it, I was too far gone.
No, this
to
is
turn around.
But yeah, she definitely wasn't her then.
No. But what a, like, a mind fuck.
Well, because people, I mean, like, that's the whole thing with, like, mentalists and stuff. Like, people know how to read people. People know how to con people. We're not that complicated.
Right. You are to give gifts. Like, I need a fucking mentalist over here to be like, this is what she actually wants.
Colby got so mad at me because he bought me a necklace for my birthday. And I was telling him, okay, well, you know, if you do get me a necklace, like, I think, like a 22-inch chain is actually the best. But those are apparently hard to get. So, like, my other one's a 24, but, like, I really do like it. And he was like, oh, my God. Like, he had already purchased it and everything.
Oh, my God.
And
I was like, of course.
Okay, I'm just going to quit talking, though.
Yeah.
Well, thank y'all so much for listening. Look, don't forget Patreon. You know what? I was like, man, Patreon for, like, a cup of coffee, like $5, you can get a lot of freaking content. So head on over to patreon.com/theapcpodcast if you want to get all that extra content. But even if you can't, don't forget to like, subscribe, review. That really helps. And also remember,
creep it real and don't get scared.